I was like, fuck, I'm going to be late, but I do want to get the sushi roll. And so I went and got in the checkout line, very, very long. Like, and I was like very nervous. That shit is run like the Navy because they have three youthful, can I say faggots on this podcast?
Oh, yeah.
Three youthful faggots on headsets being like, okay, and you're going to go to checkout for 14.
Woman in blue. Like, did they say that to you?
Women, yes. Like, okay, honey, we're going to have you to go to like a 16-year-old gay guy calling me honey, being like, okay, honey, we're going to have you go to the far line. I was like, yes, literally dumb.
Wait, but Trader Joe's wishes.
Oh, my God. No, putting Trader Joe's to shame. I was in heaven.
Because I can't tell if it's always going to be like that because I did overhear someone be like, we're in from Rochester for the day for the big opening.
I don't think the faggots are in from Rochester. I think those are local hires, locally sourced gay men. From the local springs of gay men.
Hey, Nico.
Hey, Con.
I love you.
I love you.
No homo.
A little bit of homo for me.
Just a little?
Just a smidge. From two guys who were never part of the boys club, we want to welcome you to ours.
Welcome to Boys Club.
This is our podcast.
About boys.
And about other things.
Like their clubs.
And the things we were a part of.
Hockey.
And we're not a part of.
Bagels.
Wait, did you say we were a part of hockey?
No, I wasn't.
Me neither. Welcome to the club, boys.
Grab a bagel.
Connor's like, what do boys eat?
My feelings.
Okay, what's up, Connor?
Oh, is it my turn? Okay, yes. Remember last week we were talking about Wegmans? Was that last week?
That was last week.
Okay, so today, know how I was like late and it was kind of inappropriate that I was late getting here?
Sure.
Okay, well, I was late because I walked by Wegmans and it was like
the Astor Place one?
Yeah, and it's having National Opening Day, whatever. It's like opening.
Wow.
Maybe no National. Yeah, like there were balloons and people in
polos.
Did
you go in?
Oh, I went in.
Did you get the cookies?
It was Iowa State Fair vibes. No.
All right.
No. It is really nice. It was Times Square.
Yeah, too many people.
So many people moving in no sort of important direction. But there were like all these people that like wearing polos that seemed like they like loved their jobs and were like really excited. And they're like, we're here from Rochester opening this one. And they were like, I ate a piece of bread with butter on it off of a tray. Like the free samples are apparently back.
Okay, good.
And I will be going every day.
That's
that
good.
Is why I was ultimately late to this.
Okay. Well, I mean, crazy. We'll make excuses for Wegmans. Was that your boys club for...
And then I was walking out and I was like mad. I was like, how dare he be mad at me for me? Because I just like didn't know that Wegmans was going to take this long. Like, how was I supposed to know? But I was like...
You didn't even tell me any of that.
I know, I wasn't mad. I know. Okay. And I was like, well, what if
I'm being put on blast.
What if
right
I
now.
Had an anxiety attack? Like, what if I something really bad happened? And I don't know. I was crazy. And that's called an intrusive thought.
Yeah, because we didn't even talk about it.
I know.
Okay.
And then I only got here really 2 minutes late. But so that did happen.
Did you see any boys clubs this week?
Yeah, the High Line. I'm not going.
Yes.
There. I don't believe in
Wait,
the
Wait, do you remember when you walked the High Line alone at night?
I told you about that a year ago.
Yes. Bro, I think on this podcast. Boys at Home, write in if you remember that story.
In May of 2022, I had just gone through this really, really, at the time it was upsetting, this upsetting breakup.
Yeah.
This upsetting breakup. And I like did this show at that place that burned down, not Stonewall. It's like
what burned down?
There was a thing that had a fire. The duplex.
Oh.
The duplex had a fire, and I did a show. It was like before the fire, so it's crazy that we've been doing this long enough for the places to burn down. That's insane. And so afterwards, I was just like really like confused, and then just like walked the High Line for like a really long time. So if you're feeling sad,
it's a good place to walk. But is that you are now in that boys club or you've
no? I don't like the High Line. The High Line to me,
you've
it's been, like you live in Hell's
cried,
Kitchen.
You said no,
yeah. And you think that's like a cool place to take your mom and you visit here.
It is like a place that you only take your mom when she's visiting.
Yeah.
The first time she visits,
like Chelsea Market. We're not going to Chelsea Market. We're not going to the High Line. Although I do like the Taylor Swift song where she says "Heartbeat on the High Line, na 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 lifetime."
It is cool that I randomly know so much about the High Line. I told you this before, I think.
No.
When I worked as a paralegal back in the day, it was my first job out of college. Horrible job. Never do
we
it.
We have
if
both been
If you're thinking
alive
about it,
so
don't
long.
Do it. And I had to work on this case that had to do with the rezoning of the High Line District. And apparently, it was like it used to be like a train, and they were going to either take it down, but then some people like were like, let's turn it into a park and like not make it built. And then rarely does that actually win out. Like rarely does it. So in
and
that,
that
way,
is
it's
so
cool.
Manhattan. It's like, do you know over the bridge we have parks, like actual parks, like there's real parks.
They're like, yeah, we have parks. They're in the sky, but we have parks.
Yeah, no, and they still have the little train tracks, and
yeah,
the apartments there are like really expensive, and no one has curtains. So you I just know see that's people, a little like, vibing.
Yeah, it is weird. It's almost weirder to see someone just like chilling than it is to see them like having sex or something.
No, if you live on the first
it's
floor,
like, why am I just
and
watching
you
them
have
watch
your curtains
TV?
Up, you should go to jail. Like that is.
Well, what are you gonna do?
I get curtains. You're gonna get curtains.
Yeah,
and you're in there jerking off.
I'm always
Call
like,
of Duty.
It's such a like. It's like obviously you walk by these brownstone nice homes and everywhere in Brooklyn, and you're like, oh my god, it'd be so amazing to live in one of those. But then at the same time, I'm like, but I don't want everybody to see my front living room.
Yes. Well, you would have to like have a really intense security system and curtains.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that too. I think there's something really romantic, especially in the fall, about like when you like. Oh, this brings me back to the perfect and beautiful world.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you walk by and you kind of see like families having dinner and there's like chandeliers and the TV is on and you're like, oh, that's like when I was like, we didn't have chandeliers, but like when I was a kid and we like had dinner as the end of the story.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful.
It is beautiful.
Yeah. Which boys clubs did you see?
Okay. So my boys club for this week is people who are on the ball of queer news. So when people are coming out, people are announcing relationships, people who are like the first to know. I'm talking about Jesse Ballard.
You're talking about Pop Crave.
I'm talking about the people who are like contributing to Pop Crave and Dumois and like those types of things. But specifically
Dumois
with queer news.
Dumois needs to shorten up what they're, I can't click through
it's
all
It's long.
That.
Yeah,
it's
I know. I've never gotten into it because of how long those things are. But anyway, they're doing very detailed journalism over there. But I bring it up because, as we may maybe know, Sophia Bush and Ashlyn Harris, former U.S. women's soccer player, are
who
dating
I Googled,
now.
By the way.
Okay, so Ashlyn Harris was a women's soccer player on the U.S. Women's National Team. Her ex-wife was also on the U.S. Women's National Team.
And it's a fresh
they
ex.
They won. Yeah, they were married. It was a huge, like, gay wedding, for especially in, like, women's soccer. And it was, like, they both won Olympic and gold medals and like, the World Cup. You know, like, very successful people.
Both couple? People in the couple did?
Yes. They were on the same team at the same time.
Main.
In, like, Dynasty era, like, Carly Lloyd era. Megan Rapinoe,
Alex Morgan,
yes,
who like, I really liked because I always liked a hot girl.
Of course, well, we gotta have one hot girl, of course. So anyway, so they like so that breakup is a big deal, and then now that Sophia Bush and so I'm bringing this up because I learned this from my straight girl soccer friends who like were like, oh my god, look who's like what this rumor is, and then
are
I
they to, mad? Are your straight girlfriends mad?
No, they were just like, this is gossip, this is crazy. But I was mad that I was learning it from straight people before I was learning it from gay people.
Well, it's refreshing.
So this is
that
a call to action.
To be like, and that's okay that she's gay to your friends, because I imagine they were like, this is gross.
No, they were no. they were like, whoa, this is gossip. This is tea. And also, because I have some friends who play in the NWSL professionally, they know the inside scoop.
Look, Sophia Bush makes exciting. Sense for being gay because, as you have described, the raspy voiced girl in the sorority.
Yes.
That is Sophia Bush.
She is just so close to being gay. And then eventually she is.
She was like, know how Chicago has like three famous people and it's both Cusacks and it was Sophia Bush. And now Sophia Bush moved.
Wow.
For a while, she was like the famous person in Chicago. We could move to Chicago and be the most famous people there right now. Should we all
that
do that? We could be stars in Chicago. We'll be obsessed with that.
Not while the Cusacks are still holding it
yeah,
down.
That's fair.
But anyway, so this is a call to action to all the queers out there, especially the ones who know me really well. I need to be hearing about this news.
There was a diner bakery that had a donut named after Emmy Rossum. Only in Chicago would she get a donut named after her.
Wow.
You don't even know who that is.
You're coming for Chicago today.
Do you even
though.
Know who that is?
Wait, give me one credit or something. What would I know her from?
Phantom of the Opera, the movie.
Oh, of course.
But any other person, I would have said Shameless. But
okay.
Phantom of the Opera, the movie.
Phantom of the Opera, the movie, totally.
That's it for Boys Clubs.
All right. Boys, our guest this week is an amazing stand-up comedian, and he has a podcast called Training Day.
Basic Training.
Great
movie,
sorry,
though.
I fucked
training
up.
Day.
Training Day.
Good
Basic
movie.
Basic Training. You can check it out anywhere. Boys, please welcome Jay Cornell.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, I have to tell you something right now.
Please. Okay.
Which is, as the listener doesn't know, but you two know, I was also late. And
it's
it was because I was at the opening day of the Wegmans Astor Place.
Are you serious?
I swear to God. I swear to God.
Did you see me like being rude?
I swear to God. No, I literally was walking by and I was like, wait, the Wegmans is open. And then
no
I went
way.
Inside and went into a vortex. And then I was like, oh, fuck, I'm going to be late. Because I literally spent so long looking around. And then I got a sushi roll.
Okay,
was it good?
If I know.
It was pretty good, yeah.
It's crazy to me that someone else was in there with a dream. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
I mean, truly. And I made a TikTok about this. It brought me so much joy. Because I was like, fuck, I'm going to be late, but I do want to get the sushi roll. And so I went and got in the checkout line, very, very long. Like, and I was like very nervous. that shit is run like the Navy because they have three youthful, can I say faggots on this podcast?
Oh, yeah.
Three youthful faggots on headsets being like, okay, and you're going to go to check out 14.
Woman in blue. Woman in blue. Like, did they say that to you?
Women, yes. Like, okay, honey, we're going to have you to go to like a 16-year-old gay guy calling me honey, being like, okay, honey, we're going to have you go to the far line. I was like, yes, literally dumb.
Wait, but Trader Joe's wishes.
Oh, my God. No, putting Trader Joe's to shame. I was in heaven.
Because I can't tell if it's always going to be like that because I did overhear someone be like, we're in from Rochester for the day for the big opening.
I don't think the faggots are in from Rochester. I think those are local hires.
Locally sourced.
I
think locally sourced gay men.
From the local springs of gay men, they source that water.
Jake, when can I go there ever that will not have anyone else there? They close at 10, I asked. Like, when will it be empty? It'll never be empty.
The next time there is a pandemic. Yeah. And they stay open. I don't know what to tell
Jake,
you, babe.
I went to the Navy Yard one time to go to Wegmans. Do you even know what that is?
Yes, babe, because where you're moving to, it's very accessible.
Well, it's like a 40-minute walk. It's a 35-minute power walk.
You could probably take a train or a bus.
Yeah, you can't really take it. So what I would do if I'm you, Connor is moving to my neighborhood for the listener to understand this.
The boys know I'm moving up in the world.
Okay, great. I'm going to go and I'm going to take a Revel to the Wegmans. And I'm going to take
a car.
Him.
Do you want to tell
And I'm
going to
take a
I?
Car home. Are we an anti-Revel?
We're not anti-Revel, but I can't imagine you ever riding in a Revel.
One time,
you're just
I dated
not like somebody
guy.
Who's going to drive cars or vehicles.
No. Oh, do you mean the Revel, like the moped?
No,
not
the moped. Yeah, the moped.
I've ridden on the back of one, which I think is fucking hot. Like, I'm not.
Oh, totally.
That's love. Like, that's sing to me, Paolo.
Absolutely.
And like, I want to be on the fucking highway because I want to have
Absolutely.
To hold on. Like, I
force me to hold you.
Which I would ever. No, but you gotta go. The Wegmans is amazing, and you just need to budget in an Uber home.
Yeah.
Wait, but here's the thing. Do you think I literally took a bus? I couldn't even tell you what bus it was away from that Wegmans. Like, just away. Like, I just took it away. And
you just got in and said, "I gotta get out of here."
Just like in
take
a
me in any direction
until I was like kind of near an L, and then got off and took me. But do you? I don't think I can justify ever going back to that Wegmans now that we do have Astor Place. But I do think that I would need to go to a town where no one else is there.
Wait, I'm confused though. Why would you go to the Astor Place one over the Navy Yard one?
Because the Astor Place one is in Manhattan, and it's like
you live in Brooklyn.
I know, but like I still like work in Manhattan, and like,
oh, that
I am,
makes that
like
changes
I
it.
Do hate Manhattan, but I still
I love
Manhattan.
The hard tea you're giving.
Yeah,
it.
I've
Manhattan.
Never.
Wait, can I tell you something crazy?
Always.
So today I was like, I've never met Jake Cornell, but we did make eye contact, and then I was like, I should look him up on Spotify, and then I did.
On Spotify?
Yeah, because that's where podcasts are. And
oh, I thought you meant like my listening. I was like, is that public?
No. But I would love. There's this. Do you know Sam Lansky, the writer?
That name sounds so
familiar. He wrote Broken People. He wrote Broken People.
No.
Anyway, so I was like looking it up. So then I listened to like 25 minutes of your Stradio Lab episode, which is not feedback for Stradio Lab. I would have finished it. I didn't have time. And you told a story that shook me in my core.
Which
where
story?
You were in Grease, the musical. And then you were recast.
I talked about that on Stradio Lab.
Yeah, and
I
was like, how do you not talk about
I
it every day?
I have no memory of that.
It was really jarring.
Yeah, that was, there's even, it gets even more traumatic, that story. Do you want to hear like what fully happened?
Yeah, wait, so
I'll start at the beginning.
Miko, who's never listened to Stradio Lab.
That's not true. Wait, I want to hear the story though.
I actually was really nervous to come on this podcast because I know how much you two hate George and Sam. So it's really, I'm a little uncomfortable that it's coming
famously.
Up. I was like, I want to do this show, but they're so shitty to George and Sam, my friends.
We don't like other boy podcasts.
Totally.
We're threatened.
Yeah, we're threatened big time.
So, okay, so what happened was I was in middle school in rural Vermont.
Oh.
And there was this gay guy who was older than me by like a few years. So when my school was 7 through 12, he was in high school. His parents had a bunch of money, and like in high school, they gave him the money to start a theater company.
Oh God.
So he had a, there was, so in my hometown in rural Vermont, there was a community theater run by a 16-year-old faggot.
Oh God.
Which in
theater camp needs a rewrite. I want to hear this story.
Like, had I been there now, I would have called the National Guard. Like, that is so unacceptable that happened. But I didn't understand at the time. Like, I just hit myself in the lip with this mic and I think cut my lip. Okay, cool.
I don't think we're old enough to run a theater program now.
No, 100%. So it was run with like borderline no adult oversight by this 16-year-old gay guy and his friends. So the first production they did was Grease the Musical. And all my friends, because it was like all the like artsy kids in my school, which is like, again, my class, my graduating class was like 100 kids. So it's like, we all kind of knew each other, right? And something that's so important to understand about me is like, you think I'm annoying now. When I was like 13, it was like another level. Like I was like the most annoying person in the world. So I auditioned. I got cast as Doody, I think is his name, is one of the
T-Bird.
One of the T-Birds. And I had my own song and like whatever.
What was the song, Mooning?
No, I think it's like cut from the movie. And I think it's called Magic Changes or
those
something.
Those magic.
Yeah, that's it. There 100%.
Not to trigger you.
So, well, I truly don't care. But so basically, everyone got cast, and this, it was like a bunch of high schoolers and some middle schoolers, and like no one was out, but like anyone who was about going to be gay later down the line was involved in this thing. Do you know what I mean? It was just socially fraught, and like we were like seventh graders hanging out with 10th graders at these theater rehearsals, and again, almost no adult supervision. Like it was like really socially intense in this specific way. And then like halfway or three quarters of the way through the rehearsal process, I was like, there was like a rehearsal where they were like, Jake, like, can you hang back?
But when you say they, do you just mean the director?
Correct.
Or was there like a crew?
Correct. This, no, the director who,
and was the 16-year-old who owned the company.
Yes.
And you were like, don't touch me, but I will hang back.
He was like, hang back. And
one-on-one.
He was like, we have decided to recast you as Eugene, which is like a much smaller part that has like one verse of a
the
song.
The nerd. Eugene is the nerd.
Like,
whoa.
Is truly barely in the show. And I was like, and then they were like, and he like cast another guy as Doody. And then like that, it just like happened.
Because they
like,
were sucking dicks. But I want to know.
No, I think
was
it was
reaction?
Probably, I was like devastated.
Oh, that's horrible.
Absolutely devastated.
But in the moment you were like, that's fine.
I remember, like, I walked out, and I think he could tell I was upset, and he called me, and he was like, I just want to make sure you're okay, and I was like, I mean, I'm really sad, but, like, whatever's good for the show, like, I was trying to be, like, a good, like, sport about it. I mean, I was, like, 13. This was so long
That's
ago.
That's brutal.
So then, him?
No, so it get, mama, we're not, He's this, dead. It's important to know this is the first person whose dick I ever sucked. I know, it's unfortunate. It's really unfortunate.
And he said, whoa. Still no.
Well, here's the thing with, okay, so then this is where it gets worse. This is probably what I didn't get into on Straight Up. So then the musical happens, whatever, and also, like, because, like, again, it's rural Vermont. The like bar for like art being good is like so incredibly low. Like
for
when
sure.
Grease happened, like you truly would have thought it was Hamilton. Like the way the community responded to it was like absolutely unbelievable. So then it was like this huge thing that he. So then he was like, people were obsessed with him in our town and like his musicals. And so
his musicals.
Grease was like such a big deal. So then, so everyone did Grease. It was like we're all like bonded for life. Yes, like a couple months later. I hear everyone starts talking about Alice in Wonderland rehearsals.
Oh. Oh, no.
And I'm sort of like, wait, what's going on? And at first, like, people are being, like, weird. Like, oh, we shouldn't have said that in front of Jake. Come to find out, he didn't even audition for his next musical. He just asked every single person in the cast of Grease to be in his next musical except me.
What?
Does this end with you Googling him or not?
Well, what's amazing.
Because if not, I will now.
You can Google him, and what you will find out is that he still runs the community theater in my hometown.
Fucking slay. Fucking
He did come to New York and go to Marymount, Manhattan, I think. And
that's
maybe
not a college. Cut that.
I think he did move to New York and do stuff for a little bit, but he is back in my hometown now.
Wow. This is so bitchy, but it's like at that point, go to Wagner. Like, go somewhere else. Like, come on. Like, those people, it's like you actually don't need your parents to pay $50,000 for you. Just rent an apartment at that point and just
I mean, I don't know anything about musical theater schools truly at all. But I do know that I don't want to. Okay, I'm going to say allegedly on this because I don't want to get sued. But I do have a vague memory of like everyone in my town thinking that he was going to be the next like truly like Lin-Manuel Miranda, like the greatest, like Julie Taymor, like one of the greatest theater directors of all time. And so it was a huge deal when he was like at senior, like where is he going to go? And if I remember correctly, I do think he was rejected from every single directing program in America except for Marymount Manhattan.
Yeah, that's what
allegedly, but I do think that's
is.
What happened. I haven't thought about this person in so long. I can't believe I told. Why did I tell that story on Stradio Lab?
You were just
so
like, I've
funny.
Been. They're like, when were you attacked? And then you told that story. I don't
that's
remember.
So
what
funny.
Those but I two always making it. People trauma bond. With
oh
them.
My god, they're
classic.
Obsessed with trauma bond. Yeah.
It was really upsetting. It's just like I have done so many plays brag, and like I've just never seen someone recast in that way.
Yeah, I mean, what's funny about me is that like I, and then also in my high school theater program, like the one that was like affiliated with my school, I was also very involved in that, and I never got cast as a lead, and everyone thought I was going to get the lead in this play my senior year because I think it was kind of like let him be the lead literally once, and I was told, I was made to feel in many words that it was because I did not get the lead because it was not believable that I would be in love with a woman, and it was like a romance play.
What the fuck?
And so
you're an actor.
I'm an actor, and but sometimes I'm like, I'm like, am I fully like, do I fully now have a career in entertainment that is my entire life? Or my entire career, because I'm just, like, spiting these people from... You know what I mean? It's, like, I yes. think, like
was,
I don't
what
think,
was the play? How to Succeed in Business?
No, it was a theatricalized version of the Natalie Wood film Splendor in the Grass.
You lost me the moment you started it. I was which like, is, that's not Feather on the Roof.
Which is an old movie, about Natalie Wood being so horny for a guy, she tries to, say it with me, kill herself.
What? Oh my God. What's wrong with the MTI musicals? Like, just do an MTI musical called A Day Hunk Jr. Like,
yeah. So, you know, I'm thankful for all of it. I went through a lot when I was young.
Wait, wow, not to make you wild. Feel crazy, but I was in Greece, and I was, that's actually where I met the love of my life, who is married to a woman and whatever. And, but he,
jury's still out on him
so much. And, but I was, and I was Kinnicky.
Of course.
And
are.
Then the director said that my ability to transform myself was so powerful that he was confident that I was going to be a famous actor.
Wow.
He might've said successful actor, but he
what?
Still is there.
Who did the love of your life? What was their role?
No. So actually he wasn't in that one. He was in next year Rent, but since he was friends with the guy that was like the people that were in it, uh-huh. he would like show up and hang out with us sometimes after
oh,
rehearsal.
Sure.
And it was like not a high school production. It was like a children's theater like company in Philadelphia. So I would take the train in and then afterwards we would like go to like 7-Eleven and like hang out in the park. And that's like, was like a really horny hot summer.
Wow.
Yeah. I'll send you pictures.
Please.
Oh my
God. Have
gosh.
You seen how TikTok has been showing me recently, like, I don't really follow anything musical theater related, but I've been getting a lot of videos about how everyone in England is really horny for the guy who's playing Kinnicky on the West End right now.
Okay, I have to look him up.
Yeah.
Do you remember when they cast Grease on a reality show?
I remember those reality shows, like, very...
like, Searching for the Next Elle Woods.
That's yes. the one I remember the most. I think that's the most beloved one, but I didn't watch any of the other ones, but
I remember
them.
Do you remember the girl that was...
I didn't watch it. Sorry.
You just knew that it existed? This, like, Trump or Christian one. That's it's it. Fine that she's Christian. She's
well,
Trump
a Trump or Christian one, Elle Woods.
Bailey Hanks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She didn't like gay people.
She came back. She came here. I know. We assume, you've said this, we assume on Broadway they like gay people, and we know that's not true.
Well, I think that in some ways that those
are you two
girls,
Broadway people?
I'm not.
You're like Phantom you of the are. Opera, though.
I love Phantom of the Opera. I obviously love performers and think it's excellent, sure. But I don't have a background in it because I grew up doing sports and I got cut from the sixth grade musical.
And so you took, and unlike me, you took the fucking hint.
And I got the hell out of there. I was like, well, honestly, that story and others I've heard about just like how crazy people can be. I'm like, people I think would get up in arms about sports, like, oh, people aren't playing or whatever. And it's like, it's never been as cutting as what's happening in these theater programs to these children. Like, nothing like that. But what was I saying about?
You were saying that you love Phantom of the Opera and you think that it's crazy when these adults kind of like take out their lost dreams on children.
Oh, no, what we were saying about the women who are crazy about gay people. Oh, Laura I think sometimes Auspice. It creates even more homophobic people because they're conflating interpersonal dynamics they had with young gay men in these theater programs with like just being like, well, I hate all of them. You know what I'm saying?
Kind of. Give
like,
an example.
I'm saying that if there was like if we're like thinking about a stereotypical like girl boss who's like theater girl and then like a gay guy that and they're like fighting each other
I
in
was
the theater
say,
program.
Because the converse of this is true because I have seen misogyny out of musical theaters gays in at a Herculean level.
Exactly.
I'm like Planned Parenthood protesters like women more than you. I'm dead serious. Like it's actually fucking crazy. There's this one gay guy who it's funny because like I saw him for like the second time in my life at a party this weekend and I hadn't seen him in like a year and a half.
Was it a house party or at
it was a
club?
House party? Was that a house party?
You're like, it was at a club.
I met him at a birthday party like a year and a half ago, and I was like unwillingly part of a conversation about musical theater where I was mostly just like power.
Wait,
drink.
You're describing this?
like, but it was like we were just standing in someone's apartment, and like I was drinking a drink, and people were talking about musical theater, and I didn't really have much to say, and then like this guy came in and just started talking about the women in the shows, like. It was like this thing of like you could tell he was like kind of performing like that he's in the know about things, and he was like, oh, her and stuff. But like,
yeah,
he was talking about these women like they were actual scum, and it really made me mad. And I kind of like went off on him, and like everyone was mad. I ruined the vibe, but I like, but it was like, I was like, this is so gross. Like,
yeah,
but it's, and I was like, you're just mad that like, and it was clearly the trauma of like, oh, you're mad that you didn't get to be a part of this thing in the way that women get to be a part of it because you're an effeminate gay man.
Yeah.
And you're taking that trauma out on women. And I think that like, then those men, the, I think that those women who have been treated like shit by misogynistic gay men in musical theater then go on to hate gay men.
Yes.
And it is like, I am like, I do think Broadway should maybe actually be only straight plays. Like, I don't think there should be musicals allowed. I do think it breeds a toxicity. Well, it's really scary.
Have you seen Come From Away? I wasn't into that.
Okay, so that one is sort of crazy to me because, like, I saw the poster and everyone was like, Come From Away, Come From Away. And then I was like, what's it about? And someone was like, 9/11. I was like, I don't need to see a musical about 9/11.
It is about 9/11.
And it's like kind of, it's also like, my understanding of it is like, it doesn't take place at the towers. It's just kind of like, that's the context of what's happening. It's like, did it even need to be about 9/11?
Well,
I don't know enough about the play.
I just, I actually can't think of like a single thing that needs to be like explored in a musical, but I can think of things that should be before 9/11.
Yeah.
Like I've seen, my sister was here this past weekend and I took her to see Six, the musical.
My mom loves that one.
Which I've now seen three times, which is not normal for me, but the first time was for free. And then me and my friend who saw it for free were like, oh, our other friend would love this for his as a birthday present. So we got it for him as a birthday present. Uh-huh. And then my sister came to visit and she was like, I want to see a Broadway show. And I was like, well, Six is only 90 minutes long and I know I like it and I know she'll like it. So we're just going to go see this again. But it's like, it is like a pop concert performance about like Henry VIII's wives. And it's like very funny. And I'm like, this is what a musical should be. Like when someone's yeah. like, we're doing a musical, like, I'm like, the second they make a musical about, like, the Sackler family, like, I swear to fucking God, I'm chaining myself to the door of the theater. Like, we're not doing
it. Wait, well, did you see Princess Diana,
the
musical?
Oh, my God.
See that? No. And the fact that, like, this is what I'm saying. Like, something about musical theater, like, breeds a level of immorality that is, like, so fucked up. Like, apparently the Princess Diana musical was like, bad. And I think it was the New York Post. Their headline in their review was, the Princess Diana musical is a wreck.
Oh my wow. Somebody was pleased with themselves for that headline.
I'm like, the girl died.
Yeah, like we need to have some grace for this. Oh my God.
Also, like, all the good songs have been written already. And like,
you think?
Yes. Like, we are, and like, none of these musicals have good songs at all.
Well, it feels like any of the new ones they're making are kind of weird. And any of the, and then they're just trying to do a lot of like revitalizing old things.
Yeah.
Or trying to take like big pieces of like.
To me,
IP.
It's also like, to me, I think it's also just, I don't like that kind of, because people will be like, the music in this is so gorgeous. And I listen and I'm often like, yes, for a musical.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, I'm like, oh, that song is sad. Like, or like that song about like someone losing their lover is better. Like the new Sufjan album is a better version of that. Though. Do you know what I mean? Like yeah, something yeah, that is yes. like, more, like an like a musical artist.
Yeah.
The cow is white as milk. The cape. That's not catchy.
That's. It's also just like, I don't know. There's a level. It's just not. I just don't think it's for me. I just don't think it's for me. And maybe that's like, what the guy in when I was a teenager sensed. And he was like, we're going to demote you because you're not in it.
I just. My parents are coming this weekend and they. I think we might go see Moulin Rouge. But I honestly would rather show them Fort Greene Park. Is that crazy?
Well, so Moulin. So actually, I will renege one thing, which is. I think Moulin Rouge is, I'm very pro jukebox musicals.
My mom loved that one.
And Moulin Rouge is a jukebox.
Smokey Joe's Cafe.
I don't know what those words mean.
It was in high school. I hated it. It was horrible. It was a bad experience.
Oh, okay.
No one got cut. It was too many people.
I love a I love a jukebox musical because it goes back to what we're saying. It's like their song, their real songs that were made for to be good, not to be in a musical. Yeah. And then you made a musical around it.
Wait,
like,
Moving Out Billy Joel.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like Billy, like, that's not for me, but, like, I would respect it more. Or, like the, I saw the Cruel Intentions musical because my friend was in it, and it was, like, a 90s jukebox musical.
Oh, that's fun.
Absolute
heaven.
That
is cool.
So what was the other jukebox musical?
Mamma Mia.
Oh, the one,
Is Mamma Mia.
You know, Mamma Mia is 100% correct. And then also, there's that one on Broadway and Juliet. I got to see that for free, too, and it's a Max Martin jukebox musical, so it's all Max Martin songs.
Oh, cool.
Heaven. Absolute heaven, because I don't have to hear some ballad that's like, I look out the window. I'm like, shut
wait,
the fuck up.
Wait, Max Martin wrote, what did he...
Hit Me Baby One More Time.
And What Do You Want From Me by Adam Lambert.
That, I think, is in the musical.
Wow.
I mean, it's incredible. I mean, it's... But it's everything. It's like, it's also like NSYNC, it's Backstreet Boys, it's everything.
Wow.
Yeah
the my mom loved Moulin Rouge, so I think 5 stars for parents.
Maybe we will go. Wait, can I ask you a question? Are
always.
You so you're not conflict averse?
No, why do you say that?
because you got in a fight with that guy that hated women at that party. So I guess that's incredible.
Which is really, that's actually really rare for me. I think that memory sticks out so specifically because it was like, it is so rare to me that someone has turned me off in such a way that I have been rude to them. It happens very rarely. I'm actually very, I would say I'm trying to actively be more willing to have conflict because I think I'm very conflict averse.
I'm trying to be better at that too. I texted you and I said, I'm trying to be better at having, are we fighting? We're not fighting. Okay, good. I was like, I texted you and I was like, hey, I'm trying to be better.
You said I'm trying to be conflict averse and then you just said, can we change the time of this thing? And I was like, sure.
That's so funny.
Trying to be, someone said to me, someone who I think is a little crazy actually, not crazy, why, whatever we're supposed to say. Someone was a little unhinged. A little unhinged was like, you should tell your friends that you're trying to be better at having conflict. So when you are, they're not shocked. So I'm trying to like communicate to everyone, be like, I'm trying to be better at having conflict. So if I...
That's such an interesting way to phrase it though. Better at having conflict versus like better at stating what I need.
Well, what I think you're very good at is like, you'll kind of state, oh, you're right. State what you need. I was going to say have conflict, but say what you need. And then you kind of just move on. Whereas, like, I would be on a podcast. I would think about it for the rest of my life. But what I want to know is, what's a boys club you're not a part of?
Okay, so a boys club I'm not a part of is, the way I would describe it is, like, people who have or had big boy jobs. And by big boy jobs, I mean, like corporate real jobs.
Yeah.
I've never had. And I don't understand what a lot of them are. And didn't for a long time. Like, I think because I grew up in, like, a rural area, it's, like, everyone had jobs where I grew up that were like the jobs that people have like on children's shows. Like there was like the construction people, there was like the plumbers, there was like police officers, there was like teachers, there was like doctors. Like it was like all of the like broad strokes.
Yeah.
Like,
essential
this
workers.
This is a true fact about me. A deep secret I had for the first year I lived in New York was I did not know what a copywriter was. And I was like really embarrassed and would be like, oh, I write copy. And I was like, I literally don't know what that means. And I like could have Googled it, but it was like always like, it was like this deep secret I had. I was like, I literally don't understand.
You can't even like Google it.
Like, I just like, I like literally had no idea what a copywriter was. Like, didn't like just all these jobs like that. Like people would talk about like Slack and I'd be like, I don't know what that is. Like I mean, I was a bartender until I was able to go comedy full time. Like I've never had a real job.
What did your parents do?
My mom was a secretary and then like moved up within like the financial office of the company she worked at, like to do like business admin. She was like an administrator. And then my dad does have a weird job. So when I was little, my dad worked for a cell phone company as like the technician who would go up onto the mountains and work on the towers.
Whoa.
That like send the cell phone signals. And then he transitioned into doing that, but for the 911 system. So my dad is like the technician who like takes care of the sites on the tops of mountains to make sure that 911 calls in upstate New York and Vermont are even if like there's a storm and like the power goes out or like cell phones go down, like you can still call 911.
Wow.
That's like my dad's job. There's no like easy descriptor of what that is, well, but like that's what he does.
It sounds like very important work. Yeah, Jesus.
But I never knew. Okay, so my mom worked in law, and then my dad worked in education.
Wait, you're one of those people that doesn't know what your parents do? Because I find these people infinitely fascinating.
Well, I think I know what my dad does, but my mom is more, I mean, she's a lawyer, but it's like, what does she do every day? I don't know. She answers my calls, though, in the middle of the day.
I have one friend in particular who, his dad worked at a bank, and I'd be like, what does he do at the bank? And he was like, I literally have
he
no
shows
idea.
Up.
He's like, I don't even know his title. He's like, just know
so
he works
funny.
At TD Bank.
And I just
like,
wow.
That's really crazy to me. Do you know what your parents do?
Both of my they're both doctors, so
okay,
that's a pretty simple one. Yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like I never knew. So growing up, like I saw lawyers, I saw teachers, I saw, and it was everything was kind of like that. And then the jobs you described. I didn't know that people were working in like influencer marketing or PR.
Well, I don't think they were at the time.
I feel no PR has always been a bar.
Well, PR personally, but
well,
like,
I think
but
it's
like
just I think it's a difference between living in it, well influencer marketing, but like yeah, people who are like, oh, I work in marketing or I work in this, like it was just really crazy to me. Like people, I always think it's crazy when. How old are you two?
26.
29.
Okay, cool.
Which is 26 with dyslexia.
<That's>
when
so
you
bad.
Turned 26, in my head I was like, I can't wait to say that.
That's so funny, but it's like. I always think it's crazy when I meet people our age who have those sorts of jobs. And I'm like, it's crazy to me that you had you understood that those jobs existed in college and took the classes necessary to like do that. Like, especially like people I meet like who, because I've been, okay, so because I'm single, I've been on the dating apps a little bit more recently.
Yeah.
And like, I'm like, a lot of guys, gay guys in New York work in like finance. And it's like really crazy to me that they like, understood that those were jobs when they were like 20. Like, if you had told me, like, I didn't understand what those jobs were when I was like in college. So I was I don't know what you major in business for. Like, I understand, I understand that there's like the business sector, but like, I don't know what these jobs are. And like, had I known how the world worked now, like, this is like fucked up, but it's like, if someone were like 18 and about to go to college or like about to graduate high school and they're like, I want to be a comedian, I'd be like, here are your two paths. Quite genuinely, move to New York right now and start as early as possible.
Go to Marymount Manhattan College.
Go to Marymount Manhattan College. No, move to New York right now as early as possible, because like, the earlier you start, the more time you have to like figure it out. And by like 28, you'll probably have something going on.
Yeah.
Or go to college and major in business or computer science. And then move to New York in 4 years with a six-figure job. It's going to be a lot easier because you're going to have money.
Yeah. Like, no, yeah. Literally.
You're describing our
literally.
Friend of Planned Parenthood, who works in research and makes $100,000.
And oh my God, talk about somebody who I don't know what they do. I have no idea what she does. Like, if you wanted to, I have no idea.
Back when I was at UCB, it was like half the people, like, half the people all had like these day jobs where they're making like $150,000 a year. And I was like, what are you doing? They're like, oh, I just do like computer stuff. I was like, get fucked. Like, I would have done that too had I known.
Yeah.
Like, it just,
no, I don't think that you would have, and I don't want that for you. And I
no, I ultimately like, I'm happy with my life choices, but it's just like, it's, I did not understand.
Yeah.
I just didn't understand.
No, I didn't either. I had no sense of like what, like even when I, like I said earlier, I was a paralegal out of school because I was an English major and I was like, I want to move to New York. I want to pursue comedy and I don't know how to.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to move to New York any means possible. And it was the only job I was really qualified for that would like hit me back with like when I applied. So that's how I ended up doing that. But I had no idea. Like, people were applying to all kinds of positions. And I was like, when do you learn about this?
100%. And I also didn't understand I also genuinely did not understand the concept of, like, growing within a field. Like, because in my mind, jobs were, like, police officer, lawyer. Like, to me, your job was, like, a static thing. So I didn't understand. I genuinely not understand that the system in America is go to college, get an entry level position, and then work it up. So now, like, I'm 30, and like, a lot of my friends from college are now starting to get to the place where they're making like, you know, $150,000 a year, $125,000 a year.
Yeah.
Because they started out when we were in college, like when we got out of college, and like, we were all making the same amount of money because like, I was bartending and they were doing an entry level position. I didn't understand that they will like grow within that company. It's like, it's just funny because I think, it's another reason I went into the arts was because I genuinely did not understand how stable like the other option was. Like, I didn't understand like growing within a company. I didn't understand like benefits. I didn't understand stock options. Like, none of that. I knew about none of that.
Yeah,
so like, it's not until now, and I'm fine. Like, I'm very happy with my career and stuff, but it's like, oh, part of why I did this was because I did not understand how any of that worked, and I didn't even know that was available, because it just seems so much more accessible. Like, you do the college thing, you get the job, you move up the you know what I mean? Like, the dumbest, let me tell you this right now, the dumbest fucking people in America, people make fun of like people in Florida or whatever, the dumbest fucking man in America is living in Park Slope making $250,000 a year walking through a soccer practice.
Yes.
Like, the dumbest fucking
man. Yeah.
Because they were just
literally
because both their parents were rich and from Connecticut. Like, the dumbest people in America are rich in Brooklyn.
I would argue Hell's Kitchen. I can't go there. I'm not going there.
I don't even.
Sorry.
I disagree. I think the like, yeah, the generational wealth that I see, especially coaching down there and just being down there, we're gobsmacked. It's insane, and I was just talking about this last night. Especially those people who stay in those workplaces forever, they go from growing up that way to going to an elite academic institution for college to going into these jobs and never leaving them, and only being around those types of people in these hierarchies and this little insular world. And that's exactly why they walk through soccer practices, because they're not paying attention to fucking anybody except for themselves.
Yeah, it's really crazy. So it's just I feel like that whole world is so foreign to
and
me.
I think they just atrophy. I think they get dumber and dumber the longer they stay.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, you're just in the same cycle of shit, and you're just like, maybe you're really good at understanding stock options, but that's yeah. it.
I worked in marketing for 2 years and I loved it and I was so happy and I got laid off like 9 times, but like never for performance. But like I
it's important to say.
Was so happy that like I would have died at that job. I would have been I was like I'm
what did you love about it?
I loved my team.
The hustle
I loved
and bustle.
The hustle and the bustle. I loved my hot boss named Katie who asked me if I was into older men. And I loved, and now she's sober and got a Peloton.
Was she the one that said, stop working?
No, that was Tammy.
Oh.
Tammy, who always has sunglasses, never on her eyes, always on her head. And she, well, she's the one who made me realize I don't have anxiety. She has something medicatable. I'm just anxious. Different things.
100%.
But sure. I like loved it. And
that's
I think
like when you meet someone who actually has ADHD. And I'm like, oh, everyone else is just
no,
normal.
Totally. I think that about sadness. If you're sad, I think it's amazing. You'll be like, I'm so sad. And then you'll kind of be like, it's fine, actually.
It's literally
like, fine. I'm like, you'll see a real sad person. It'd yeah. Like, it's actually, I got out of bed this morning and I yeah. look great. Yeah. But I feel like there's something in this world where we cannot, because like, what you're describing is not someone who likes their job for sure, necessarily. Like yeah. what you're describing is like some a means to a six-figure job so you can do the things you want to do. But I think that in this world, if you... it can become gold handcuffs if you have a job that'd be hard to leave.
Yeah.
Like, where you're like, oh, but it's a really good deal. Like, whatever. It's like,
oh, 100%.
You need to be able to ready to walk off site any fucking day because someone who maybe knows someone at Sony maybe texted you in, like, accidentally. Like, it's, you gotta be ready to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, 100%. It is, it's not, I'm not necessarily, I'm not speaking about it in a way of saying, like, I wish I had done that or I'm yes. envious of it. It's more just, like, really remarkable. I'm constantly, like, flabbergasted at how completely unaware of it I was.
Yeah.
And how much everyone else apparently knew.
And it does feel like an access thing. Like, yeah. where if you can only envision a life for yourself that you see. We talk about queer representation, but, like, let's talk about
financial
that's, no, banker that's representation. That's literally it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's literally it. Like, when I was growing up, I thought the only way you could get rich was to become a famous actor, or which is the one I went for, or become a doctor. And I was like, I'm not doing organic chemistry, so I guess I have to become an actor.
Yeah.
Like, I genuinely, like, I think I went after these like insane career goals because I did not understand this whole tier in the middle yeah. that was available. Like, I genuinely think that.
Yeah. Do you think Trumpers, like, we don't talk about Trumpers a lot on this, but like we really don't. So I feel weird even bringing it up. But like, do you think Trumpers, this is kind of fucked up, whatever. They look at him and they're like, this is a rich man. How did he get this? We love him. We believe in him. It's like, well, he's in this thing called real estate development. And I don't know what that is.
Yeah,
so you
no.
Research.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think it's like idolizing a businessman is like the entrepreneur thing. Like, yeah. it's a similar thing for sure.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's even with like within like the comedy community, like the people who like came up in the media space, like new to like, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. and have like these like writer jobs, not like TV writer jobs that you get, but like the more like came up in like the world of like, they went to these colleges that then led to like working at Jezebel or Goth, yeah. you know what I mean? Like that world yes. to me, that was also completely foreign to me.
Yeah.
It's just funny. Like if you, depending on where you grow up and like also where you go to college, like you see these paths and then if
yeah.
you don't see those paths, you don't know about them until you're kind of beyond them, like it's too late to be on them, but you're like, oh, I guess I could have done that, but I had no idea that that was an option. Do you yeah. know what I mean?
No, I feel yeah. that all the time.
Am I making sense?
Oh, absolutely. No,
you didn't live in Chicago, did you?
I've never been to Chicago.
Don't even go.
Okay. I hear really good things.
It's fine.
Well, we'll get donuts named after us, apparently. But
also, wait, just on that, Emmy Rossum is famously gluten-free, so that's funny.
But that's fucked up.
That's fucked up.
Hopefully it's a gluten-free donut. Yes, I was saying this the other day about comedy stuff as well. Like, I also feel like as I've met more comedians who come from all kinds of different backgrounds and those who, like, yeah, found their way into certain jobs right out of school or, like, yeah. knew how to get, like, a writer's assistant job or, like, even
had
came here
no
over the summers,
idea.
I had no idea that that was an option.
Okay, what is a boys club that you are a part of?
The one that came to mind, I was like, I think is like the New York restaurant industry because I worked in it for so long.
Yeah.
And it's a big part of my life.
Which ones did you work at?
I worked, my first job in New York was at Maialino, which is a Danny Meyer restaurant in Gramercy that I think is reopening but has been closed since the pandemic. And then I worked, and then I opened the Knickerbocker Hotel in Times Square.
Whoa. I have a shirt from there.
Why?
You guys are.
Do I have a shirt
crossing
from there?
Paths
I have
left
a shirt
and right?
That just says Knickerbocker.
Well, that's, it's like the most common word in New York City.
mad.
And then that's what the New York Knicks are, the New York Knickerbockers. It's like a New York.
It's either a nice New York thing or a shitty street in Bushwick.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then I worked at Rosemary's, and then I worked at a bunch of places in the East Village throughout, like, these two wine bars in the East Village through the pandemic. And then that was the last, like, full-time restaurant job I had.
Damn.
I've never worked in... I worked at a restaurant in Philadelphia. I never worked at a restaurant in New York. I think that would be...
It's like... I feel like it's people don't understand how hard it is to get those jobs, too. Like, aren't they pretty, like... It's pretty competitive here.
It depends. Well, it's, like... It's funny because, like... Okay, my foot just got caught. It's funny because restaurants are funny because they will be really, really competitive and be like, it's really hard to get a job there. But then also, like, if you catch them on the right day and they're desperate, they'll literally hire you off the street. Do you know what I mean? It's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Because you just need the bodies.
That feels so 42nd Street the Musical, the way you said it. You're like, all right, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Because someone fell and broke
their ankle. Sure, mister.
It's truly like that, though. So
sure, I'll put on an apron right now.
But it's like all of that first job in New York, Maialino, we were all super, super close because it was such a bad job that the staff really bonded.
Yeah.
So those are, 10 years later, I'm still very close friends with them. 9.5 years later, I'm still very close friends with all of those people. And most of them were restaurant career people. Like, that's what they wanted to do. So they all, like, are GMs of restaurants or, like, run bars or, like, are Bedford directors at places. And then my roommate is a chef who owned a restaurant and now works at a few other restaurants. And, like, his husband also is, like, in the restaurant world, like, the restaurant
media. You live with
world.
A gay couple.
I live with a gay married couple and their
Wait,
dog.
I pictured a straight couple. What does that say about me? Wow. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
You said married. I heard cis.
Yeah.
Cishet couple.
No, they are gay and they have a dog. So I just live with, I worked in restaurants a long time, so I also just know a lot of people. And then a lot of the stuff when I was doing videos on the internet more, like, regularly was restaurant stuff. So then that brought in a lot of, like, and then I had a podcast about restaurants for, like, 2 years or, like, a year and a half. And so, like, it's just that's always been, like, my second life has been, like, restaurants and stuff.
Yeah. Talk to me about the restaurants, Coke, nightlife. That energy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's big, right?
I never worked at places where people were doing coke while they were working. I know that those restaurants exist. That was never my... The thing was, for me, when I was working in it, was like... So when I moved to New York, I had been a bartender all of college from sophomore through senior year, and I loved it. And so when I moved to New York, I was like, I have it made because I would be happy being a bartender the rest of my life, and I want to be, like, a comedian and actor. So, like... There's no failing. And then, like, after working in New York restaurants for, like, 2 months, I was like, I can't do this. Like, like, I can't do this forever. Like, I realized how, like, I was like, oh, like, you can't be, physically, you can only bartend for so long. Like,
yeah.
It just physically is exhausting. You know what I mean?
And, like, I'm sure mentally, like, your brain is on.
Yeah.
On.
And also, like, it actually really dovetails into what we were talking about earlier, where it's, like, also realizing how other jobs, like, your income grows and your stock options grow and your retirement grows, so that when you're old, you don't have to work as much. And that's not how bartending works. Bartending doesn't grow within the company. You know what I mean? So I was like, oh, like, as I was learning how that stuff worked, I was like, oh, fuck, this job is not sustainable. I guess now I have to become a big, successful, famous actor. You know what I mean? But it's like,
yeah.
And so I always worked in places. I was very conscious of working in places that didn't suck all my energy out, so that I had stuff left to give to my actual dreams and career. So, like, Maialino, like, was the worst place to work in the world, and they would make us work, like, 65, 70 hours a week, and, like,
oh,
it was awful.
God.
So I left there, and then the Knickerbocker was, like, fine for a while, then sucked, so I left. And then I stayed at Rosemary's forever because that was the perfect level of...
Where is that?
It's in the West Village on 10th and Greenwich.
Cool.
And that was, like, a very well-oiled, chill restaurant. Like, no one's doing coke there. It's like it's like an easy Italian restaurant. And, like, I liked that because I could leave and I wasn't wrung dry of my life force. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But I have friends who work in those places. And, like, I think it's a fun era to have. I don't think it's healthy to do for a long time. I mean, obviously, coke is not healthy to do, like, all the time. But I think – and I also think that era – cool New York restaurants are a dying breed, and it's very sad.
Yeah.
And restaurants can't... TikTok and social media has done this thing where... That I think used to happen always, but now happens on a much more accelerated rate, which is places can only stay cool for so long before they have to become lame. And I think some places have done the staving off. I think like Bernie's, which is around the corner.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with Bernie's.
I was there 2 nights ago. Like, so I go there all the time. I think they've done a very good job of like staying cool in spite of being incredibly popular. And I think because they're good at like not catering to the masses that mm-hmm. then come in, because like restaurants are a two-way street. The staff can be cool, the product can be good, the vibe in the room can be right, but also the people in the room have to be good too, right? Like, yeah. If everyone in a cool restaurant is a loser, it sucks. You can feel that vibe. And so as like certain restaurants get more and more popular, like the louder the dinner, the louder the, what am I trying to say? The broader the like scope of how cool this restaurant is comes, that the wider out that goes, that means it's reaching lamer and lamer people.
Yeah, totally. You know what I mean?
Like, coolness is in proximity to like being in the know, right?
Yeah.
In theory. So it's like the more popular something gets, the lamer the people are that find out about it. And like lame people are often, and when I say, I shouldn't be using lame, it's an ableist term I'm realizing, but like the less cool people, like it's like part of what makes you not cool is that you like don't go with the flow. You're like, no, I need my table now.
Yeah,
I want my sauce on the side. I need this. Yeah, I'm sending the food back. That's what not cool people are, right?
Yeah.
They don't have a vibe. They don't go with the flow. And that disrupts like the vibe of a whole place. And so then that shit like naturally happens.
Yeah. It's kind of like a comedian who just posts crowd work clips and then they show up to their shows and all the people are heckling them and they're like, oh, fuck, what did I create?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Balthazar's not cool anymore and Carbone. I would say
Balthazar. See, the thing about Balthazar is that it's so old and such an institute. The Keith McNally, James Corden thing won me over in a way where I was like, I'll stand Balthazar to the end of time. I think that's so funny.
True.
I thought that was so funny.
Yeah.
And like Keith McNally is obviously like not done a lot. He's done a lot of like bad things and I don't necessarily think he's a good person, but like that shit was so funny. And I think it's different with a New York, like Balthazar's been around for like 40 years.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's a coolness to that kind of is a little less touchable. I think they get to hold on. You know what I mean?
Like a Cat's Deli has been around for like 100 years or whatever. Like they'll never not be.
Like I think, is it touristy? Yeah. But what I went to, like I had a friend who was visiting like a couple months ago who was like, I really want to go get a Reuben at Cat's. And I was like, okay, I haven't gone in 9 years. Like I'm happy to do that. And I went and like, was the sandwich $40? Yes. Was it good?
Oh my God.
Yeah. But like, and it's like, great. I had a great time. I don't think like it is, there is a coolness about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you know the bus stop in the West Village?
Like, what is that?
Is that a restaurant?
It's like a restaurant.
Oh, I was like, oh, any bus stop?
I was like, I think this lyric. She's like, thought I saw you at the bus stop. I didn't though. And I always thought it was just like a bus stop. And then I recently read that is actually a place in the West Village where Carly Kloss goes.
Wait, one of the kids I coached told me that when she was young, she lived across the street from Taylor Swift.
In Pennsylvania?
No, Cornelia Street. Well, this girl is now a child. She's like six.
When I was a kid.
When she was a kid. I know they always said that. You know, when I was a kid, and I'm like, you are a kid currently. But
I know the exact street.
I said on Cornelia Street, and she said, yup.
Wait, that kid has money.
Money wars.
I do believe for all of us that one day a check will come so large that it will outweigh any financial advice some man could have given.
100%.
Yeah, I've always thought that. I've always known that.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
People like tell me about Vanguard's 401ks. I was like, it'll be fine.
It'll be fine.
I'm not worried.
And then my aunt died and left me 38K. And it was like, little by little.
There we go. Yeah.
It was a long time coming.
Wait, when did this happen?
She died 2020. It was not, it was a treatable thing. I recently realized this. My mom really reframed it for me. I don't know how I got on this. Sorry. My mom, whereas like she died of a sickness and my mom was like, well, it was a totally treatable sickness. So it feels a little like a peace out Girl Scout from her. So
she was like, I'm not dealing with this.
Yeah. She just kind of died.
I mean, to each their own, I guess.
She was really a whack. My dad's from a pretty wackadoodle family.
It happens.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wait, I had a question about, on the topic of restaurants and stuff. Did you like The Bear? Did you feel that was accurate?
I have not brought myself to watch it.
Okay.
Because I think I will like it. I auditioned for it, so I had to I really liked the script that I had to audition with. Like I enjoyed that, which made me want to watch it.
Yeah.
Because I really enjoyed that scene. I think that I think what made me not want to watch it was when I was working in restaurants early in New York was like very much the period of time where it was like Anthony Bourdain, or I mm-hmm. guess like he was Anthony Bourdain. It was like not his peak. Cause that was when we were much younger, but it was like, there was some food media. I'm forgetting what it was. There was a book that had just come out or something, but it was like, It's like when restaurant culture enters the mainstream media, everyone suddenly thinks they're an expert on it. And then they show up to restaurants with that energy and kind of act like they know your job better than you. And I projected that onto the bear, perhaps unfairly. But when I first saw it come out and saw it get popular, I was like, fuck, it's going to make restaurant people feel so miserable.
Oh, totally, totally.
And I do think that. But also, like, this is a conversation I have all the time that I think is fascinating, which is like, what is a television show's, how much is a television show culpable for the audience's reaction to it, if that makes sense? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, is Girls responsible for the kind of people it made in Brooklyn? Is Sex and the City responsible for the kind of girls it brought to the West Village? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's like yes and no. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because it's like if they missed the satire of these characters.
It is like the true, this is the thing, is like the danger of satire is that when satire gets popular, most people don't realize it's satire and they view it as aspirational.
Yeah.
I do sometimes think that satire is ultimately bad for society.
I know. I saw a TikTok of Lena Dunham talking about Girls after the fact, and somebody's basically speaking to that point of like, you know, these characters are like insufferable and not likable. And she was like, well, yeah, that's what I was writing. I was writing about the people I know in a way that was supposed to be satirical about and poking at these girls' identities in that way.
I've had conversations with people my age who have said that they kind of went through an identity crisis in their late 20s when they realized that. Like, oh, I like watched Girls when I was 18 and was aspiring to be these 24-year-olds. And then it went through my 20s and then got to my late 20s and realized like that was never what I was supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, like you don't like satire. Like there's a cultural danger to it. Like I think it's important and like you can't make everything so pedantic that it can be completely accessible and like really read explicitly without any like and like kind of holding your hand through it.
Yeah.
But when you do something a little more subtle and like satirical and not that doesn't have a laugh track, it doesn't, people don't understand it. Like,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's funny because I watched Girls for the first time like I think last year, I guess it must have been last year. So I was, you know, 25 and was like watching this for the first time and was like, oh, like I'm uncomfortable and anxious watching this because like this is people my age being stupid.
Yes, 100%.
And it's making me anxious and whatever. But we were talking to, I think maybe Moss Perricone was talking to us about how he watched it as a kid, as a teenager.
Yeah.
And it was like, same thing. It was like, I can't wait to move there. I can't wait to see this life. And so really the age you approach that at is got to be drastically.
It's like how, it's like the straight version of this is like dudes who watch The Sopranos. It's like, you're not supposed to want to be like them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're all running from an emptiness that leads to them all dying.
Yeah. Like, yes. No, like, that is so true. That is such a problem, especially with men's, quote, men's media. Media that is centered on the like men's experience or masculinity or something. It's even when it is, you know, using these macho guys as a vessel for talking about this. And even though he's in therapy the whole time and it's very clear that we're talking about this, they still miss the point and they're like, 100%. This is awesome. I want to wear tracksuits.
I feel like Real Housewives has to fall into this conversation as well.
That's really interesting.
Do you think people watch it because they want to be like them?
See, I think... Oh, sorry.
No,
I want
go ahead.
I want you to finish
your
thought.
I think... Well, I don't know straight women, I just realized. Because I was going to just say, well, gay men. But I feel like there's something very theatrical about it. And a willingness to have conflict and insane conversations that I am curious if that like resonates with people. Yeah. I just got into Real Housewives and the way that is like how you have an episode and then a fucking half hour of a news show after.
Yeah.
I was like, this is a cultural phenomenon. Like it's an hour and a half every night of television.
It's every night.
There is something happening on that. Is it Watch What Happens Live every night?
Watch What Happens Live is every night. But
and
then
it accompanies something before?
Well, Watch What the Housewives airs once a week.
Okay.
And then sometimes like they'll kind of like overlap the...
New York and right now in Salt Lake City overlap.
Right. So then it's like kind of two are airing at the same time. Gotcha. So, like, two
and then Below Deck, whatever the fuck that is.
Totally.
Below Deck and something else. There's another one.
Yeah. There's like Southern Charm or whatever and Vanderpump. Like there's... I mean, it's a whole network of television. But... I think that Housewives is a little bit different because I don't think anyone thinks it's aspirational. I think that Housewives is really like a zoo. Like, it's people watching zoo animals because something. So I watched Housewives religiously when it first started, when I was like in high school.
Yeah.
I was an OG OC watcher. I was an OG New Jersey, New York, OC, and Atlanta, which I think were the first four series. I watched those, like the first three or four seasons of those, like religiously every week. And then I went to college and I didn't have cable and there wasn't streaming yet. So I like fell off. And then when I graduated college and had access again, there was like 32 seasons of everything. And I was like, well, I can't catch up. And I'm kind of complete. So I like
literally can't.
So I recently re-entered with
New York.
New York, because I was like, it's a clean slate. I can get back on. And it's been very interesting because I love it. I love it. And a lot of people I'm friends with who have been watching a lot of Housewives this whole time hate it. And it's like, it's because they want the like people who have like severe substance abuse issues and like, and like BPD like screaming at each other. And like the current season of Roni is a little more like people navigating like being on television for the first time and social dynamics. Yes. And there's a little bit of like chess happening of like everyone's trying to be the cool girl and who's going to be the cool girl. And it's like a little more subtle and nuanced. And people be like, it's boring. And I'm like, you're just mad that like no one's like thrown a glass at someone's head yet. Like, but there is like conflict happening and is interesting.
It's subtle drama.
Yeah.
And I think it'll get there because I think the pressure cooker of being on a reality TV show
will break.
Comes for everyone and breaks them in their own way.
Yeah.
And like the entertainment of the season of the following seasons will be how each person breaks in their own way.
Yeah, but
like, it's just funny to me how I'm like, oh, you guys, like experiencing the fandom now, I'm like, yeah, you want like derangement, because I do think there's like, as opposed to like aspirationalness with reality television, especially with Housewives, I think there's a comfort of like seeing someone who is objectively worse off than you.
Yeah, mentally. I am. And it's true. Like in the second season of this, because I'm watching New York too, they have not enjoyed their celebrity yet. They are right now are living on what they imagine, like the high of just being on the show.
Yes.
And like, no, now it's like people follow them. They're in the news. They're on Andy Cohen's little couch. Like they are celebrities.
Yeah.
And that'll be really fascinating. But then also, I think it'll that like rude awakening where it's like, yeah, like sigh.
She's toast. It's so bad.
God.
Well, there's never been someone less likable on television. It's actually remarkable. It's actually remarkable. I mean, like, it was funny because me and my roommate were watching the finale, and I turned to him at one point and I was like, I'm screaming at the television like my stepdad yells at the Patriots. Like, I was like, I was like literally yelling at the television. I was like so hype about
that
it.
That is so funny.
She makes me so mad.
She's really bad.
I need to watch.
She makes me so
That's a nice one to watch because it's like one season.
Okay. New York one.
Yeah, it's 14 episodes.
Oh, great.
Bing, bang, bong.
And it's like, I don't know why he's going to Vietnam, but I think just like go. Like, just go and then come back. I just don't care.
So nasty about that. And so, like, I was like, you are being, like, rude, disrespectful, annoying, and racist all at the same time. And I'm like, this is
almost
like
impressive.
I was like, this is a her, like her performance on Roni is like a Herculean feat in being unlikable on television. Like, it's like amazing to me. And like, I also did feel a little bit bad because like, I mean, no, actually, I don't feel that bad because it's like she says some really horrific shit and behaves really abysmally. But also the editors do her literally no favors, like do her like in the finale at one point. She's like she says to like right before it cuts to commercial, she says she's like, you know, I love you. You've always been my best friend. Like you've been my closest friend in all of this. And then it goes like coming up on The Real Housewives of New York. And it's her being like, fuck you. Happy birthday. And then walking out of the room to the same person. And it's like
she is someone who is putting on this like Veruca Salt show, and I think she thinks it's funny, and it's like actually in this world where we're also looking at like Jenna Lyons,
she's someone who thinks she's my least favorite thing in the world, which is she's someone who thinks being passive aggressive is funny.
Oh,
and it is the most unfunny, uncomfortable thing in the world.
I hate that shit.
It's constant.
Okay.
It is
I have
constant.
To watch.
Yeah. Almost in a way where I'm like, I actually want her to get, you don't watch Salt Lake City, do you?
So I for my old podcast, I interviewed Lisa, so I watched a bunch, and I...
Connor's floored. In person?
On Zoom.
Was she nice?
Lisa was... I've interviewed Dorinda, Luann, and Lisa.
Her son's going on a mission.
Lisa. This was my favorite part. So at the end of the interview, it was, like, super fun. She was like, we're going to send you... Because the reason they did it was to promote their tequila brand. And then she was like, at the end, she was like, she said to the producer, she was like, Katie, can you send Jake's, like, info. We want to send him the tequila and some other stuff. And I was like, oh, that's so sweet. And then like a couple weeks later, like the tequila never arrived. But then like there was this package addressed to my apartment to Jack Cromwell.
Yeah. No.
And it was
that's the straight version of you.
And it was like her son's skincare line. Oh, like, it wasn't even tequila. It's called like White Wolf or something.
Yes, he's a
and
nice I was, entrepreneur.
Like, but I like didn't because I don't watch the show. I don't like watch the show litigiously.
That is so
I like
funny.
I opened it in the apartment and was like, what the fuck is this? And my roommate was like, that's Lisa Barlow's son's skincare line. And
wow.
I was like, wow, amazing.
Addressed to Jack Cromwell. That is so funny. That literally is your straight alter ego.
He's on a mission now, so he will not be doing any more of that because he's on a mission.
What's that mean?
He's Mormon.
Oh.
So they kind of do like a 2-year Teach for America kind
no,
of
I
thing.
No, I know. I've seen the Book of
Don't
Mormon.
Equate it to Teach for America.
Whatever you think about TFA, I agree with.
Oh, on the topic of aspirational for reality shows, I feel like the only one that still exists maybe is the Kardashians. I think there are still some people who find them aspirational.
Oh, I think that's undeniable.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, they're massive. Unless I'm missing any, because who else? It's like Housewives, there's a ton of dating shows, and then there's them, but there's not really any other reality star. I guess there's, from the kids, I'm hearing there's somebody named Alex Earl who's on the come up, but she's like
an
influencer.
That's TikTok. That's TikTok.
Yeah. I guess that's where it exists now. If there's 100%. Aspirational people in that way, it's 100%. More TikTok than.
Well, I walked by my Pilates client 3 weeks ago from England, and her name's Jess. Don't cut that. And she's really lovely. And I said, hi, Jess, I love your nails. And she said, I'm going to be on Netflix. And I was like, swear to God. And I was like, what? And she's like, I'm going to be on Netflix. And then I was like, oh, she's on Ryan Serhant. Do you know Serhant? The real estate thing, some real estate show that's like a Selling Sunset equivalent in New York. And it is real. I Googled it. And then I was like, did you just find out? And she's like, no, we've been filming for 4 weeks. And I was like, did you just walk around town, everybody that's screaming amazing. It on the. It's like, at one point, you're going to have month. To get used to it.
Yeah.
Selling Sunset does also kind of exist in that like sort of aspirational, sort of not.
That's true.
Selling Sunset, Selling OC.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you watch both?
Yeah.
Okay. Selling Sunset. Blue, Selling OC red. This is a Republican Democrat.
So I call Selling OC Selling Sunset All Villains. it's the All Villains season.
Wait,
that is so true.
It's
so
unbelievable.
Bad. They're crazy.
Except I do after season two, really, I fuck with.
Don't say Jarvis.
Yeah.
Wait, she's a Trumper.
Is she really?
She was like insurrectionist.
Wait, Jarvis was at the insurrection?
No, she wasn't there, but she liked to post, and I found out because of Reddit, where she's like an insurrection pro.
Okay, so I don't like her anymore, but I do.
She's obviously the hottest person I've ever seen.
Well, no, her face is evil.
I thought you were going to say immaculate.
She's gorgeous. What a Disney animator would make like an evil woman look like.
Wait,
like.
Well, they don't usually make the evil women look ugly in Disney. You know what I mean?
No, like, I'm not saying she's not beautiful, but like I don't think there's a good soul in her body.
Wait, when Alex says, what does discernment, and she says, you don't know what that word means, and she says, I do believe that you don't. Do you remember what the interaction we're talking about? That was like the most insane thing I've ever seen. It was incredible.
I mean, she's one of my, do you know what was my obsession? This is, I don't know if you guys will remember this, but I watched it 42 times, was in season one of OC, when Rose and Jarvis were talking about the water filter. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I can't
it's
with
this
Rose,
clip.
Though.
It's this clip where they're like, she's like, I'm sort of, she goes, this is kind of weird about me, but I'm sort of like a water sommelier. And she was like, that's awesome. I love water. And she's like, yeah, I just like really love good, clean water. And then she's like, that's so great. And then she's like, she has this like, she's like, I have this dream that one day you can get these water filters installed in your sink and they come right out of your tap filtered. She's like, wow, how much does one of those cost? And she's like $6,000. And then Rose goes, okay. And like looks out into like the sunset, and that's like the whole scene. It's like the craziest. I was watching it with my ex when we were still together, and I was like, rewind it. And then we played it again. I was like, rewind it again. Like I made him watch it like 5 times.
I'm stuck on water sommelier. That's a hilarious
everything
title.
About it. I was like, is this a sketch? Like it was the best.
That's so
everyone
funny.
On there. So I'm really big on Reddit, and you know, as a reader, and all of them are Trumpers. Or alternatively, there are two Democrats, but they are RFK. So, Hot Austin and his wife are RFK fans.
Oh, and then who's the other blue one? Brandy?
Polly.
Who's the main Alex who's like really evil?
Alex. Okay, and she is freshly evil. Alex, because she wasn't last season. Last season, she was Chrishell Vibes. And then this
no,
season
I
like,
don't you dare compare the two of them.
Well, Chrishell Vibes.
The show wanted to be Chrishell. She's like, so...
That is how I feel about Selling Sunset. It's like, even when they're bad, you're like, but they are friends with Chrishell. They have at least one queer friend. So they're like, maybe fine.
I really... Selling Sunset brings me like a lot of joy.
Totally.
Like, brings me a lot of joy.
I love Emma.
Do you watch all... That's crazy.
I've actually never seen Selling Sunset. I've seen a couple episodes of the second season of OC because we were watching it at a friend's house recently.
Okay.
And I don't know why I wasn't thinking about this, but I just like kind of forgot about the fact that like they're also showing gorgeous houses.
Gorgeous homes.
So I was like, okay, so on top of the drama, you're also seeing the most amazing homes you've ever seen. So that part's fun too. But I need to watch Sunset because I haven't watched it, and I feel
Sunset is Sunset is amazing. Sunset has something really amazing.
I don't feel that because I love Barry, and I don't feel that Chrishell is stirring. I don't like stirred pots. I just want to watch people live their lives.
So did you not enjoy Christine?
Here's what I'm going to say to you. I did in the way that she knew what she was doing and that I don't think she was generally vapid and that it felt fun from her. Whereas someone like Sai, it's not fun. Like Christine.
That's the thing is Christine.
Cool.
I think that Christine was one of the greatest reality star performers we've ever had, especially in the early seasons, because she knew how to stir the pot and then show up and just be like, I'm so sorry. I was crazy. And like keep it going. Whereas like Sai, like Christine was on top of it. And Sai feels like she's like literally flailing.
I do feel like Sai is like moving a sled, and she's, you know, when you move a sled, you're like down.
Yeah. When they don't know how to drop it, you're like, you are not equipped for this. Like 100%. You think you are. Like you are flailing and making it worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also when it's like, oh, you're not, you like, Sai will be talking about things. Sai will be arguing about something in a way where you can tell she thinks the audience is going to agree with her.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you're wrong.
Yeah.
And it's weird to watch, whereas, like, when Christine does it, it's, like, you can see how she's playing the game to, like, make drama, but it's not like who's right or wrong, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Can you tell me, and this is kind of a boring question, but whatever, can you tell me, what should I feel about Aaron on Roni?
It's really complicated. It's a really complicated question, because obviously everyone's immediately like, well, she was also a Trumper, but she has denounced it, but she was fully a Trumper both elections.
What?
Yeah, well, she's like a Zionist Israel. Like,
we're
like,
just like so far from being Trumpers. Yeah. Like, we're just really far from.
So, but she has since denounced it. She's like, I was duped. I don't support him anymore. Like, that's
okay,
what she said.
Okay,
she's like, not for me, Ted Cruz. It's gonna be Ted Cruz.
And here's the thing. It's like is that like a huge knock on someone's character? Yes. Do I think it's important that we like allow people to change? Yes.
Yeah,
or like, what
sure.
are we gonna do as a society?
No, literally.
So it's
literally.
Like, there's that. I really liked her in the first half of the season, and especially because like I thought when she like welcomed everyone into her gorgeous Hamptons home, and everyone was like nothing but rude about her about it the entire time, and I was like, well, I don't see us at your fucking house. Do you know what I mean? Like, Uba, Sai, and Brynn were all just like so bitchy about her house, and I was like very team Aaron in those moments. In the later half of the season, she just picked the wrong side. I'm like, why are you team Sai?
It's almost like she's like, oh, and it feels
the
like
the way
Sai,
that Jessel won this season is actually unbelievable. Because like Jenna's obviously the top tier, like ever, she's always gonna be top. She's untouchable. But the way that like Jessel just stuck to her guns and actually was her own person the entire time. Because Brynn, the thing about Brynn is that she literally has an allegiance to no one. Like she has talked about every single person on the show behind their back and started a fight with every single person on the show because
she
like,
wears is that hat she wears? I can't say anything about it because it's religious or something. That
I
hat
don't
is
think
crazy.
It, that hat is wild.
She's
the fur
always
one.
Wearing like a
but like Brynn just like always. Brynn will just always kind of like. Brynn's like water. Like she just kind of goes wherever, and but not in a way that I dislike. But like it's hard to root for her because it's like she's not on a side.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah.
Jessel has just always like been herself, and that was not likable in the beginning because she's a little weird, but then became likable as
she
realized it was authentic.
Oh, interesting.
Whereas like, and then Sai, you were just like, oh, you are nasty.
At first like, I was like, you live in Boreham Hill, I love you. And then it unraveled. But and then, okay, here's the thing. I think that Jenna, for Brynn, for me, Jenna's appreciation of Brynn validates Brynn as probably 100%. A good
I 100% agree. I 100%
which
agree.
Happens. And then also the men. I cannot with the men that care. Why do these husbands get involved?
I never need to hear from Sai's husband again. I low-key... Pavitt says some shit that annoys me, but I do stand Pavitt making a TikTok explaining the whole Vietnam flight. I thought that was very funny.
I think he's also so just like disinterested. He's like, oh, my wife's doing a project. That's fine.
100%. I just think he's like, whatever. Like
the men that are like, and I love Seth Marks, whatever. But like the men that are like, oh, I'm gonna get involved. I guess it's the only time where I'm like, men should let their wives do whatever. Like I just feel like men should like stay in their lanes and like yeah, not get involved.
I don't need them on. I don't need any of them. Do you know who I need on the show more though? Is Beckett, Jenna's son. Jenna's son is amazing. Yeah, in the finale.
What a classic rich boy name.
It's also just like he has this scene in the like. I don't want to label. He's like a teen, so I don't want to like speak to anything to his sexuality or anything. But I will just say like there's an iconic scene with him and Jenna getting ready for an event where she's like. Where there's like a 14-year-old boy and she pulls out a garment and goes, what do you think of this? And he goes, what am I looking at? Like this 14-year-old boy.
What am I looking at?
That's amazing. So good. I was
like, so sweet on that. And like the rawness and the vulnerability. And she'll be like, I really like my son, which is nice because like my mom always hated me. And she says it. Whoa. It's like really a story and like beautiful.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, her so childhood sounds so brutal.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah. Okay, should we get to our last question?
What's a boys club that you want to see in the world?
This was the one I struggled with the most, and I think my aunt... Okay, here's my thing is, this would be very good for me, is I need there to be... I want a boys club for boys in Brooklyn who are quitting cigarettes.
Yes.
Because yes. I smoke cigarettes and it's disgusting.
What kind do you smoke?
Like, usually Marlboro Lights or Camel Blues. And I'm not like a smoker, like I'm going to light up after this, but it's like if I'm out and I'm having drinks like and there's cigarettes, like I'm absolutely smoking them. For and sure. Then I wake up in the morning and I feel disgusting. And then it's like that cycle. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's like it's when I'm present. This is why I want a community of it, because it's like right
people
now
who won't do it.
My roommate, one of my roommates smokes too. And that's the problem. It's like if we're sitting in the backyard having like a glass of wine and he pulls out cigarettes, like I am smoking.
You're going
to
have one. Yeah.
But we're both going to quit next month. We've decided like November it's done. But I want there to be a whole community of people who are also quitting. Also, because that would mean that everyone at the bar would have Nicorette gum. And then that would also be really helpful.
And that would be better than cigarettes. Yeah, it is so hard when it's something... I think that's probably one of the hardest things about smoking is that it's so communal that, like, people are... You're always going to be around it at a time where you're like, all right, like, yeah, like, why don't I have one? And it's like, I'm already drinking, whatever.
100%. And it's also, like, I don't think I had really ever encountered, like, chemical addiction before. Because mm-hmm. I was, like, a very... I probably smoked my first cigarette at some point in college. And then... would smoke them very occasionally throughout whenever. And then like a couple years ago, I got introduced to vaping and then I bought a vape and then you can vape inside. And then I was just constantly hitting a vape. And then I got so addicted to nicotine.
Yeah.
But the vaping made me feel crazy because I was doing it like, because you can just like, I mean, I could have been vaping this whole interview. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, and then that is like so gross that I was like, I have to quit vaping. And so to quit vaping, I started smoking cigarettes.
I know. It's crazy that that's literally the trajectory so many people went
so
on.
So many people are. So many people now are addicted to cigarettes because they vaped.
Yeah.
And now it's
so
like,
vaping is so much more insidious for that reason of it being
and
so casual.
Maybe in the long term, it'll also be a good thing because now it is like I'm addicted to nicotine in a way where I can't smoke cigarettes. Like now if like I'm out and there's cigarettes, I'll smoke six, which is gross. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas like it used to be like maybe I'd smoke one or two a month and like that's very Gwyneth Paltrow and I kind of think that's healthy for you probably but like smoking like six in a night is objectively really bad for you and so I just want it to be done and I want a community of people who are quitting
hard to quit anything. It's hard to make change. Like sometimes I think you just need to up and move, but I don't feel like that's an option here.
Well, also it's like cigarettes are everywhere and they're cheaper everywhere else other than New York, so it's like I don't know that moving would help.
Yeah,
like I got sober when I was 22, brag. And I feel like I got sober because I moved towns.
Oh, wow.
By towns, I mean North Carolina to Chicago. I was like, yeah. And there's something about Chicago where I was like, okay, I don't drink here anymore.
Interesting. Yeah. You got sober after living in North Carolina?
Yeah, I could not get sober there. But it was a mess. I had kept trying to.
I mean,
to.
College I is impossible to get sober.
Yeah.
Were it's you like in college when you got sober? Or no, when you left college?
The last time I slipped or whatever was in college, senior year of college. May or March, I'm not really sure.
But it's like so.
So you started trying to get sober very young.
Yes, I was very bad very fast. It was very bad very early.
It's not bad, just.
No, it was.
Well,
like, it
your
was
relationship
bad.
To alcohol was bad.
Oh, yeah.
You weren't bad.
Well, I feel like I was lucky in that I had very big red flag moments, whereas I think people can be like kind of a problematic relationship with alcohol for years.
100%.
Just, like,
I was
at,
like. I don't want to say this in a way that sounds rude, but a green flag to me is when someone had severe addiction very young. I usually like those people.
Yeah.
People who are like, I had a severe alcohol problem when I was 15. I'm like, I like you.
Yeah.
Like I stopped. Like, I always like those people.
Yeah.
I like stopped drinking. I mean, I stopped drinking liquor. I was like only beer, but then I would drink like 16 beers and then black out from beer, which I think is impressive almost.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. But it was like early. It was like I was in the hospital. I was like, I was arrested. It was like getting kicked out of college. It was like all these things that made it get looked at, which was like 100%. Kind of lucky.
What were the ages?
I started drinking when I was like 16 and I.
And you were out by 22.
Yes.
And when was the first time you tried to stop?
19.
Wow.
It's so impressive, it's though. Sort
of, there's an efficiency to it. Like, yeah, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
It's kind of what I'm saying about smoking, where it's like, perhaps it's better that I'm getting really addicted right now and then quitting than if I were to casually smoke for 30 years.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Something should be, like, when something is a big problem, you have to, like, okay, I hate that this is going to be on Morning Pages. Literally hate this is going to be on Morning Pages.
It's okay.
There's something about Morning Pages, which I don't do. But, like, I don't know if you do Morning Pages.
No.
I'm not doing that. But when I was doing them, there is something about writing down your issue that's like, oh, I have an issue. Like,
100%.
Yeah, maybe you should write it down. How
it is crazy how much, like, yeah, naming the, like, that's such a cliche thing, but, like, quote, naming the feeling, like, helps so much. Because you say these things, these, like, therapy speak things, and you're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then you do it, and then you're like, oh, fuck. I really genuinely didn't know that that's what I was feeling until I wrote it
down. Yeah, no,
and it feels so,
so
stupid. And
it's
so,
crazy,
like,
that you don't have to smoke. Just like I don't have to go to SoulCycle 3 times a day, but I think that I do to find stillness in this chaotic world.
Do you go to SoulCycle 3 times a day?
Like, so I went twice yesterday and I felt really, it did not help me. I felt anxious, but yeah. I go because sometimes it's like, I can't imagine, I don't want to work right now and I can't imagine being frozen or still. And it's the only thing that makes me, but there are people that are just like totally chill. There are people that are just like making a roast, like looking at artwork. Like, I've never been that. And I would love to be that, but it's
That's
like,
so funny.
Getting sober isn't going to make me calm, but yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
I forget what the point of that was.
Well, oh wait, on your sobriety journey, I was going to say that, like, it has always been so impressive to me, like, how, like, at such a young age. And also, like, you have to give yourself some slack, because, like, I can't imagine getting sober in college. Like, what an environment.
Sober?
No, but that is an environment that is just, like.
I carried him home from the bar the other day.
Hell yeah.
He didn't piss himself.
You pissed yourself?
Oh, I got, no, not a lot. I don't.
The most unbelievable part of that was carried. I didn't carry.
Yeah, you didn't carry me. I'm trying to think if I've ever pissed. I don't think I have. I've thrown up before.
Yeah, similarly. I don't think I've ever pissed myself.
Well, that was the issue is that I would never throw up. I would never throw up. So, like, I would. It would just. I think throwing up is good. Growing
yeah.
up, it's like your body telling you
boot
to stop.
Boot rally.
Mm-hmm. My body was like, it's like, we'll take it. We'll fucking take it.
Those Irish bones of yours, they were like, we've taken worse.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. All right. Well, before we wrap up, Jake, is there anything you want to plug? You want to plug your socials or anything coming up?
Yeah. You can follow me on Instagram or TikTok at Jake W. Cornell. You can listen to my podcast, Basic Training. My show, Gorge Night, is coming back in the new year.
Yay.
So check that out. And I think that's it.
Awesome. And don't look up Jack Cromwell. He does not exist.
No, he does not.
Awesome. All right. We'll get out of here on a smooch. 1, 2, 3. What's up, boys at home? Thank you so much for listening to our podcast, Boys Club. Connor, where can they find you on Instagram?
At Connor Janda, C-O-N-O-R. Janda is panda with a J.
And you can follow me at Nico Carney, N-I-C-O-C-A-R-N-E-Y. You can follow us both at Boys Club Comedy on Instagram. And we have a live show.
Our live show is at Club Coming, typically on the last Friday of the month. And it is always the two of us and some of our favorite funny people. And we'd love to see you there.
Yeah, often people from the podcast. So come check those out. If you live in New York, we'd love to see you there. Bye, boys.
Bye, boys.